Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service, with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Andrew Peach, and in the early hours of Sunday, the 28th of July, these are our main stories. President Trump triggers outrage with derogatory remarks about a black congressman. And Russian police detain more than 1,000 opposition activists at a demonstration in Moscow. Also in this podcast, violent clashes in Hong Kong between police and protesters.
A couple of weeks ago, it was unusual to see a few projectiles being thrown at the police. Today, there were lots of bricks, poles, bottles, and the police also have responded in a tougher way.
And the failure of Romanian police to respond to three emergency calls from a teenager who said she'd been abducted and is now believed dead. Let's begin in the United States, where Donald Trump is facing a backlash over a series of tweets insulting a veteran African-American congressman, Elijah Cummings, and his majority black constituency. This all comes less than 2 weeks after Mr. Trump tweeted that four women of color in the U.S. Congress should go back to the crime-infested places they came from. Our correspondent in Washington is Chris Buckler.
Well, this was a tweet that was specifically targeted at Elijah Cummings. Now, he's one of the Democratic members of the House of Representatives who has been coming to the fore lately. He can be a very, very harsh critic of President Trump. And he's been described now by the president himself as a brutal bully, accusing him of shouting and screaming at the great men and women of Border Patrol about conditions at the southern border. Now, this all dates back to a congressional hearing which Mr. Cummings was a part of, in which he spoke directly to the Secretary for Homeland Security, Kevin McAleenan. And at one stage, he asked him if he would be happy to have his child sitting in their own feces and not able to take a shower.
None of us would have our children in that position. They are human beings. What I'm saying is I want to concentrate on these children. And I want to make sure that they are okay.
It's one of those moments that I suppose has caught the attention of people. It's clearly angered President Trump. And as a result, he has hit back, suggesting that perhaps Mr. Cummings should be looking at the problems in the district he represents as opposed to the problems at the border.
What sort of reaction has there been in Washington to this row, which, as you say, is fiery on both sides?
Yeah, well, you can imagine that the Democrats have struck back extremely hard. It is worth pointing out that the place that is represented by Representative Cummings is majority black. He represents a part of Baltimore, which is in the state of Maryland, just outside Washington, D.C. And President Trump described it as a disgusting rat and rodent infested mess and said if he spent more time in Baltimore, maybe he could help clean up that dangerous and filthy place. Now, as far as the Democrats are concerned, they believe that that is racist. And Nancy Pelosi has released a statement in which she has criticised the president very, very strongly. And of course, the Democratic House Speaker has also been someone who's at the forefront of criticising comments recently from President Trump against four Democratic congresswomen. Again, it is the president and the Democrats clashing, and it's again the president being accused of racism.
Chris Buckler in Washington. Next to Hong Kong. Yeah, police armed with tear gas clash with pro-democracy protesters on Saturday during the most violent demonstrations yet. The protests began nearly 2 months ago, but tensions have boiled over since last weekend when suspected gang members assaulted dozens of commuters with batons, an attack that activists say was orchestrated by Chinese officials. Lam Chuk Ting, a member of Hong Kong's Legislative Council, was injured during that violence.
Most of the Hong Kong people are still furious about the barbaric and brutal attack. And we are also very angry with the police because the force haven't tried to stop the attack.
Our China correspondent Stephen McDonnell is in Hong Kong.
You know, a couple of weeks ago, it was unusual to see a few projectiles being thrown at the police. Today, there were lots of bricks, poles, chunks of the road, anything, bottles, whatever people get their hands on, and the police also have responded in a tougher way with rubber bullets, tear gas, pepper spray. Now we have a situation where both sides, it's like they have set the scores to settle or something like that. And it just seems to be ramping up with more and more anger. It's hard to see how this de-escalates given that that's been the pattern.
Unless something gives, unless something changes, it will happen again tomorrow and next week, and the situation of escalation that you've described will continue. So what do you think is going to bring an end to this?
Well, this is the big question. This protest movement started off against this extradition bill, a very unpopular bill to make way for people in Hong Kong to be sent to mainland Chinese courts. Hundreds of thousands of people took to the streets. And so I think now Carrie Lam and her government will be thinking, how do we let it escalate to this? I think personally people will say that she's shown very poor leadership. It was her arrogance in not listening at all at the beginning to the protesters, which has led to this movement just escalating and escalating. And now they've gone well beyond this talk of getting rid of the extradition bill into the territory of, we want democracy, we want to vote for our own leader here, we want to vote for those who are in the Legislative Council here, which people see as a rigged assembly. And given that neither Beijing nor the Hong Kong government is going to give the protesters this, it is very hard to see where the end is.
And how long will Beijing be willing to tolerate this kind of thing week after week?
Well, you can imagine the Politburo Standing Committee watching these images of rebellion in Hong Kong. There would be fury at the top level of the Communist Party. And the worrying thing is that at some point they could take the nuclear option, if you like, of sending out the People's Liberation Army, who are garrisoned in this city, to retake this city by force, with something along the lines of martial law. You know, if that happened, well, it'd be the end of Hong Kong as we know it.
Stephen McDonald with me from Hong Kong. How likely is it then that Beijing will intervene directly after 7 weeks of demonstrations and unrest, many people injured? Where is all this heading? Lynette Ong is Professor of Political Science and a China analyst at the University of Toronto. What does she make of the widely held view in Hong Kong that those responsible for last weekend's violence were paid to attack the protesters?
I cannot say for sure that they were employed by Beijing, but my research on thugs for hire, which is very common throughout mainland China, suggests that this is usually deployed by people who want to evade responsibility, number one, and it's a very expedient way to intimidate people. So we could imagine a range of, aside from Beijing authorities, a range of societal forces within Hong Kong whose interests actually align with Beijing, such as businesses, such as pro-Beijing citizens in Yuanlong, in New Territory, which is an area just right next to Shenzhen, which is traditionally quite pro-PRC. Those people might want protests to end, and therefore they might mobilize local triad members to deal with protesters. The order might not come directly from Beijing, but their interests are definitely aligned with the Beijing government.
And yet, as we've discussed, the protests are continuing despite these attempts to put them down. At what point do you think might Beijing say, look, enough is enough, this has got to end?
That is a very tricky question. If this happens in mainland China, there's no doubt that the government would have sent in the PLA and put down the protesters.
That's the People's Liberation Army, yeah.
Correct. That's the People's Liberation Army. But Hong Kong is different from mainland China for a number of reasons. Number one, legally, it's a special administrative area under one country, two systems. So it's governed by a different law. But more importantly, Hong Kong is Hong Kong because it's an international financial capital. So if Beijing were to send in the PLA, it would undermine the Hong Kong government, number one. Number two, it would look very bad in the eyes of international investors. It might threaten them to pull out their capital out of Hong Kong. That is just going to be disastrous.
Do you think there are those at the top levels of the Communist Party in Beijing who see all that's happening right now in Hong Kong as a direct challenge to their authority?
Definitely, definitely. I mean, Politburo Standing Committee is by and large hardliners, right? People who support Xi Jinping are hardliners within the party. Protests of this scale is definitely seen as a challenge, direct challenge to the party. But I don't think, my reading is there's no consensus within the top echelons of power in Beijing how to deal with it. Definitely not you using the traditional means of sending in the military. So they are really out of their comfort zone a little bit because they could not use the traditional measures of control that they usually deploy in the mainland.
And yet we had that statement, didn't we, earlier in the week from the Defense Ministry spokesman talking about China reserving the right to deploy troops in Hong Kong if requested by the local authorities, I think was how it was put, which sounded a bit like a warning.
Yes, it's a warning. I mean, under the basic law, there are two ways to send in the troop. The Hong Kong government could request the assistance from Beijing and the PLA to maintain public order. Number two, Beijing could declare a state of emergency in Hong Kong and justify the use of troops. But either way, it would look very bad on the part of Hong Kong government and Beijing.
Lynette Ong with James Menendez. Astronomers have been left scratching their heads as to why an asteroid, which came out of nowhere, sped dangerously close to Earth this week. They call it a city killer. If it did hit our planet, it would be 30 times more powerful than the nuclear bomb dropped on Hiroshima. More from Daniel Mann.
At the grand old age of 100, the eminent British scientist James Lovelock has a grave warning. He celebrated becoming a centenarian on Friday by sharing his thoughts on his life and work with the Science Museum in London and revealing what he feared most.
Looking ahead into the coming century, that might affect the Earth's climate or the conditions on our planet. And my answer is fairly simple. We have ample evidence that asteroids can repeatedly hit planets in the solar system, and they do catastrophic damage when they do.
It's emerged that asteroid 2019 OK was travelling at 87,000 kilometres an hour on Thursday, distance from Earth 73,000 kilometres. That's not a reason to relax, because according to astronomers, the asteroid which snuck up on us was uncomfortably close, one-fifth of the distance from the Earth to the Moon. 20 years ago, scientists could spot around 24 dangerous asteroids a year. Now they can pick out 2,000. But 2019 OK, which ranges in size from 57 to 130 metres, was discovered only this week, and its arrival was announced just a few hours before hurtling past Earth. Among the reasons given for not spotting it earlier were its size, reflected sunlight, its orbital eccentricity and speed. Professor Alan Duffy is an astronomer from the Royal Institution of Australia.
It's only a couple of times further out than our GPS satellites. This is in our neighbourhood, and we need to be monitoring the skies. We have found maybe 1 in 100 of these kind of city killer asteroids. We need to do more, we need to do better, and we need to do it quickly. Again, it is a matter of time. Sooner or later, one of these asteroids will have our name on it.
So what could be done to stop large asteroids such as 2019 OK hitting Earth? Gravity tractors could be developed. They would fly alongside an asteroid for a number of years, nudging it off course so it misses Earth. But this may not stop all asteroids, and Professor Duffy said that blasting one with a nuclear weapon, as some have suggested, was the stuff of Hollywood.
Daniel Mann reporting. You're listening to the Global News podcast from the BBC World Service. Still to come, we look at what's being called a Roman biro.
It's the length of a modern pen, 132 millimetres, and on it is an inscription.
An inscription that tells a joke. Police in Russia have detained more than 1,000 opposition activists at a demonstration in Moscow. The activists were protesting after several opposition candidates were barred from a vote due to take place in September. This from Moscow, from Oleg Boldyrev.
"Let them in," chanted a crowd moving through a Moscow street. The rally in support of opposition candidates disqualified from the race for Moscow City Council was dispersed, but groups of protesters remained in central Moscow for several hours. Earlier there were clashes with the police. By the evening, hundreds of people were detained. At one point, I saw four policemen wrestling to the ground, a man easily twice their age. he wasn't giving up. "I'm against these thieves," he said. "President Putin, Moscow mayor, prime minister, they're like a gang, simply taking and taking from Russia." The would-be candidates themselves were arrested even before the rally started. Past experience shows they will be fined or detained for up to a month. Their plan to widen anti-government sentiment via an electoral campaign in Moscow is now in tatters, but they will hope protests will linger long enough to overshadow this and other regional elections.
Oleg Bolderev in Moscow, next to Romania, and a disturbing case that's cost the life of a 15-year-old girl, provoked an outpouring of public anger and seen the country's police chief sacked. The principal failure was this. Why did it take police 19 hours to respond to a series of frantic emergency calls made by the teenager named only as Alexandra? She went missing 3 days ago. She made those calls on Thursday morning saying she'd been abducted. But it wasn't until Friday that officers finally searched a house and arrested a man. James Menendez talked to the journalist Kit Gillett, who's in the capital, Bucharest. First of all, why the delay?
For a start, the police have said that they struggled to pinpoint where she was, that the emergency calls only kind of gave a general area where she was. So they blame that for a large part of the delay. But at the same time, they were at the property where she is believed to have been held for a number of hours before they went in. Now, they were waiting for an official warrant, and then even after the warrant, they waited a couple of hours. Now, part of that, they said, was due to following protocol, which says they're not allowed to enter the property unless, you know, they hear sounds of struggle or that they fear for someone's safety inside. And because they were not sure that this was perhaps the site, and because they had looked at a few other places in connection with this disappearance, that they did not go in early. And that has caused a lot of anger that it took 19 hours from when this 15-year-old girl last made a call to the emergency services for the police to enter the building where she was believed to have been kept.
And just to be clear, Kit, there were three calls, is that right? And potentially from what, the suspect's phone as well?
That's the understanding, yes. She managed to make three emergency calls on Thursday morning, shortly after she was taken. And in those calls, she said she'd been kidnapped by a man who'd picked her up as she was hitchhiking back from a nearby town. Now, the lawyer of the man, the court-appointed lawyer of the chief suspect right now, actually told local reporters that it seems that the calls were made from his phone, but that the man had not given any sense of how this came to be. So that obviously raises a big, big red flag.
Yes, indeed. It is a dreadful case. And as you hinted at, it's provoked a furious public reaction.
Very much so. Last night, there were the hundreds of people who gathered outside the suspect's home, demanding both justice for him, but also for those in positions of power who were responsible for this huge delay in going to this property and trying to rescue this girl. Now, tonight, hundreds of people have also gathered in Bucharest to protest, again, blaming authorities for this, obviously not for whatever actually happened to the girl, but the fact that she could have been saved if they'd reacted quicker. And we, again, have seen strong reactions from politicians, from the president and prime minister, saying that they will look carefully at who is responsible for this and see if there can be ways of both tightening up the procedure, but also in maybe stronger punishments for serious crimes.
And just as a coda, the main suspect is a 65-year-old man, and he denies murdering the girl. And in fact, I don't think she's been found or formally identified. Is that right?
No. So there is obviously big questions about what happened to her. I mean, the fear is that she was killed, but no body has been found. On the property where, you know, she was believed to have been held, police found fragments of bones that may be human. They also found pieces of clothing and jewellery that the family of the victim says could have belonged to her. But there has been no body found, and there have been no, you know, signs of a struggle or blood or anything that shows what her fate may have been.
The journalist Kit Gillett in Bucharest. China is pushing to restart a hydropower project in the north of Myanmar, which was suspended due to public protests 7 years ago. Aung San Suu Kyi's government has said it's working to find what it calls a solution with China, the country's biggest investor, over the fate of this $3.6 billion project. That, in turn, has led to renewed protests against the dam. Laura Owen reports.
This is where the Irrawaddy River, that's often described as the lifeblood of the country, begins, where two rivers meet and then start to flow down. And it's the proposed site of the Mison Dam, one of the biggest and most controversial hydropower projects in the region, in a place considered the ancestral birthplace of the Kachin people. This song talks of the area's importance and natural beauty. Lu Ra says singing it is now a form of protest against the dam.
Whenever we sing the song, we feel like crying. If this dam project is built, we won't see this landscape anymore. Please don't build it. Just let the Irrawaddy River flow freely forever. We have a duty to protect it.
The Mison is the first and largest of seven dams planned by the Chinese state-owned developer, a project that was meant to be completed this year, and which is estimated to generate more power than the entire country produces now. Much needed energy. But would flood an area slightly bigger than Singapore, causing irreparable harm, says environmentalist Dr. Min Zor.
We're going to lose the primary forest, the last remaining forest of the area, together with rich biodiversity and ecosystem for the whole river. This is the main river in this country. We're also going to have a huge downstream impact. The hydropower project, most likely to kill the river.
And displace more than 10,000 people. Jia Lai was forced to leave her 40 acres of land to make way for the dam that has yet to be built.
I cry every time I talk about the Mison Dam. Now I have nothing because of it. Before, we ate what we grew. There was no need to buy anything. When we were forcibly moved, the Chinese company gave us this small house and compound. We can't do anything in here.
Aung San Suu Kyi and ministers involved in the negotiations over the future of the project declined our interview requests. But in a public forum earlier this year, Suu Kyi made a rare comment about the dam, saying it was important to uphold investment deals, otherwise the country would be seen as unreliable. And if the world doesn't want to work with us, it will have a big impact on our country, she says. These comments, as well as lobbying by the Chinese ambassador, who said in the statement that the project has the support of the Kachin people, has sparked fears that this project will be revived and a wave of new protests against it has begun. A crowdfunding campaign asking people to donate a dollar each to pay back China for the deal has been started. Finding a solution to this standoff is difficult, says analyst Con Tui, given the key role China is now playing.
The other redeemer of the Myanmar in front of the international platform, and the biggest investor of the country. So without their investment, whether it is a question that whether Myanmar can go along by itself or not.
While negotiations take place behind closed doors, some families have taken matters into their own hands, returning to their villages inside the dam project area, hoping they will never be flooded.
Laura Owen reporting. Now, what is in effect a Roman biro has now been analysed and deciphered. It's a stylus found in the centre of London, and it comes complete with a joke. I asked Terry Egan about the find.
This was made during excavations in the City of London. It was found next to what's now Cannon Street Station on the banks of the River Walbrook, which is a former tributary of the Thames. Now, London, or Londinium, was at the time, 2,000 years ago, a small Roman outpost, but nevertheless important, and the dig threw up 14,000 artefacts. Now, archaeologists have been working through these. They include 400 wax tablets, which is what Romans wrote on at the time, but also this iron stylus, dating dating from AD 70, just a few decades after London was founded. It's the length of a modern pen, 132 millimetres, and on it is an inscription. This was hard to read at first due to corrosion, but it's recently been deciphered.
And it's been deciphered and proven to be a joke.
Well, yes, archaeological finds, while always thrilling, are sometimes seen as a bit worthy, if not forbidding. Helmets, swords, coins from this or that era. Even these wax tablets were mainly concerned with legal or business matters. But this is something we can identify with. It's basically the Roman version of a biro with a joke on it. Now, you might be thinking of something like, I went to Rome and all I got was this lousy pen. But it's not quite as catchy as that. Here it is. I have come from the city. I bring you a welcome gift with a sharp point, that you may remember me. I ask, if fortune allows, that I might be able to give as generously as the way is long and as my purse is empty. Now, you may have to think about that a bit, and you can, of course, listen to this again. But basically, it's touting the skill of the writer, perhaps with a mild plea for employment or money, maybe even a threat to poke fun if this isn't forthcoming. But it gives a real sense of the person who might use it, perhaps a lowly scribe or a lonely soldier. And more than that, it shows how important writing and literacy were across the Roman Empire. These were people separated by vast distances, and it shows that they could share a joke, just as we do now, but in other ways. And, of course, it's also a comment that's now travelled not only through space, but also through the distance of time.
Terry Egan reporting. And that's all from us for now. There will be an updated version of Global News tomorrow. If you'd like to comment on this edition or the stories we included, do drop us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. My name's Andrew Peach. Thank you for listening. And until next time, goodbye.